Support for Health Matters on MSPR comes from the Northeast Kentucky Area Health Education Center, located at the St. Clair Regional Medical Center in Moorhead. Additional information on the Northeast AHEC is available online at neahec.org.
Ignition sequence start. 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, 0. All engine running. Liftoff. We have a liftoff. 32 minutes past the hour. Liftoff on Apollo 11.
Hello and welcome to Health Matters. I am your host and radio health evangelist, Dr. Tony Weaver, and we proudly dedicate this show to NASA Chief Engineer Larry, who let us know that he was listening. That was very complimentary, and so we want to return the compliment. He was chief engineer during the Apollo moon shots, and he also did work during the early space shuttle days, and says that he actually likes the show. And you know, Rick, I mean, here's what's wrong with America today. You get a brilliant guy like Chief Engineer Larry, and he's listening to Health Matters. You see how far things have slid with the generation.
I don't even know where to go with this. I mean, you know, I don't know.
His
credibility is tainted right from the start.
Yeah, it is.
He likes us.
You look at
That's
this guy,
good.
His resume is just bursting with scientific accomplishments, and
then there's us.
Then there's Health Matters. And you ask, well, how retired is this guy? I don't know.
Well, no, I mean, you know. He didn't like us till he got retired.
That's right? True. I think Larry in his prime would be just as appalled as most of our listeners are. Thanks to our listeners to True Talk Internet Radio. And here to explain even more technology, how you reach us on the World Wide Web from the University of Kentucky, Communications Infrastructure Manager Rick Phillips. Hey, Rick.
Hey, Tony. You know you can get the audio of the show at WMKY.org. That's more at State Public Radio's website. You got to find us in the menus. We're not going to make it easy on you. You got to go get to the Health Matters portion of that website, and there you'll find the most recent shows. They're there with a summary. Maybe help jog your memory. Certainly listen to them. The audio of the show is linked right there with each show. There is a link to the podcast in case you like to podcast. If you don't know what podcasting is, obviously you can do a quick Google search and figure out exactly what podcasting is. But basically, podcasting allows you to have something delivered to your device automatically so that you can be listening to Health Matters the moment it hits the internet. After that, jump over to Facebook.com, as Chief Larry did, and interact with the show. Give us some feedback. Give us some show topics. You better be careful, because if you do, we could name a show after you. You never know. It's out there. But it's your way to talk to Health Matters. So certainly look us up on Facebook, facebook.com/HMRadioShow.
Our sponsor for today's show, in honor of NASA Chief Engineer Larry, the grapefruit juice, the healthy, all-natural way to completely screw up your medications. Just a reminder.
Can we just start saying NCE Larry? Let's just say NCE Larry. Let's just short. I mean, I'm an acronym guy, Tony.
All right.
Acronyms.
NCE Larry, you've got it.
And, you know.
And we decided to talk about things about Florida. First of all, we're big fans of the research they do in Florida on lightning strikes, ramming bridges with barges. This is manly man research. We've been very impressed with University of Florida as well as Florida State for many years.
But
there are
some
things.
We're not going to talk about that.
Yeah, there are some things. For instance, Florida right now is ground zero for Zika virus. There are, at the time we go to air, over 24 people that appear to have acquired a local infection, and they have a man in Texas now who apparently developed Zika virus, actually caught Zika virus while visiting Miami. And this, again, we expect fully that the Zika virus will spread to the Gulf Coast. It is going to be a really interesting disease, and I say that in a horrible way. It may become a sexually transmitted disease as much as a mosquito transmitted disease.
Well, I wanted to talk about this up until you said that.
Yeah, and for most people, it's just another virus. It's muscle aches. It may be a rash and some fever. But for women who are pregnant, who are thinking about becoming pregnant in the near future, this disease carries all of the lifelong implications of HIV, AIDS, or some of the worst things we've had. Again, having a child born with microcephaly is a horrific thing, and so this is going to be the scourge of pregnant women and people planning a family for apparently a pretty long time until we can get a vaccine.
Tony, I'm not pregnant. let's go out on the, you know, that's not going to, you know, that's not me, but I am going to Miami in a few weeks.
All right. And you have, again, at your advanced age.
I like the way you say that.
With mature children and no plans to increase the size of your family, at least personally, you are fine. You go to Miami, live it up. I would do some mosquito repellent just to, on general terms if I went out.
I'm not going to go on their beaches.
Okay, but at any rate, you're fine. But those are, you know, those are the good things. Again, the research that comes out of Florida, Zika virus is one bad thing. The other thing, and we have this ongoing battle with grapefruit, and we have, as you know, we've been rebuffed by the Florida Citrus Growers Association.
We won that battle. Well, we don't like grapefruit, and you can't make me, you can't make me, you can't make me.
But just a reminder, there is more than just a personal distaste for grapefruit. It actually has medical problems. This is from the FDA. From the FDA, the Food and Drug Administration. It was updated last December. Again, grapefruit are a part of a balanced and nutritious diet, unfortunately, but they are. But they can have serious consequences when taken with certain medication. There are more than 50 prescription and over-the-counter drugs known to the FDA that have negative interactions with grapefruit. As little as one cup of grapefruit juice or two grapefruit wedges can alter the way your medicines are, the way they work. If the label reads, do not take with grapefruit or similar words, heed the warning. And they have, here's several tips from the FDA, from their, this is currently on their website, on what to do about grapefruit. First of all, ask your pharmacist or other healthcare professional if you can have fresh grapefruit or grapefruit juice while using your medication. Secondly, read the medication guide or patient information sheet to see if it interacts with grapefruit juice. Some may advise not to take the drug with grapefruit juice. It's okay to have grapefruit juice. There will be no mention of it in the guide. Three, read the drug facts label on your non-prescription medicine, which will let you know if you can have grapefruit juice with it, and it does interact with non-prescription as well as prescription medicines. Four, if you have, if you can have grapefruit juice with it, check the label of bottles of fruit juice or drinks flavored with fruit juice to make sure they don't have grapefruit juice, because some fruit-flavored drinks actually are flavored with grapefruit juice, although we can't imagine why.
So Tony, is it the acid, the citrus? I mean, what is it that's really, I mean, do they have any idea why?
Yeah, they absolutely do. It turns out it ties up a key enzyme in the liver that's supposed to break the down medications.
Right.
So they last longer in the presence of grapefruit juice because the liver is busy breaking down the grapefruit juice.
Not mine.
Yeah. our livers remain fresh and unaffected
fresh
by grapefruit.
Fresh as a daisy.
That's right. And number five that you need to know from the FDA, Seville oranges, which make orange marmalade, and tangelos affect the same enzyme as grapefruit juice, so avoid these fruits as well.
Ruh-roh.
If your medication... So you're a marmalade tangelo
guy?
Well,
I don't go out on a limb and have a lot of marmalade, but I have been known to have it two or three times a year, so...
If you're not on regular medications, you're fine. That's our sponsor, Grapefruit Juice, the healthy, all-natural way to completely screw up your medications. Now, I've got to tell you, Rick, I am an.
Do
this
you
thing
have to?
With yeah, this thing with NCE Larry excites me because I grew up as a kid looking up into the sky. I will tell you, my generation.
Well, you grew up looking up to everybody.
Yeah, true. Thank you for pointing that out, that I'm not as tall as you are. But there was on Saturday morning TV, there was this poem. This was the only poem that a young boy would know. But I know for a fact in the seventh grade, I knew this poem by heart. It's from John Gillespie McGee Jr. It's High Flight.
See, I was thinking, I'm not a bill.
Oh, no, it is. Thank you very much. Yeah. But this one, this for a kid growing up in the 60s, you know, when we were not practicing our calisthenics to defeat the Soviet kids
doing
in hand-to-hand combat.
Dance.
Yeah, doing the chicken fat thing. Or when we were not ducking under our desks to avoid nuclear explosions, we actually were looking at space. In my mind still, perhaps the greatest accomplishment of this country was to put, with the technology they had, to put a man on the moon. I absolute, total admiration for these folks. And I could recite this poem. It was High Flight was a poem about an aviator that was John Gillespie McGee, unfortunately, died at age 19 back in 1941, but sent this poem to his parents a few months before he died. And it was made into this wonderful video poem for TV, and I remember that.
Don't remember that.
Because every Saturday morning they would play it on TV. A lot of TV stations actually signed off with High Flight instead of the national anthem.
Oh, wow.
So this was a really big deal. So imagine then, I am, as I said, I am a total fan of NASA. I also happen to like space a lot. So here...
And me, on the other hand, you know, I have a daughter who just graduated the first ever class at Morehead State University of a master's level space systems engineering.
Right, and so we got to say,
we're pretty big fans.
NCE Larry and any of his colleagues, their ex-NASA people, Rick's daughter is looking for a job in space science. Just hit us up on the web, hit us up on our Facebook page, and
absolutely
any job
shameless
offer,
plug.
Right. There you go. But back to me, Rick. Let's say back to me. Okay.
It was never about you, Tony. It was never. It was about your fascination.
We just
with
went
NASA.
Through the Perseid meteor shower. Did you hear about this?
No.
Okay. Well, this is.
I know it's been raining a lot.
Right. Comet Swift. Thank you very much. Comet Swift Tuttle. We fly through the tail of Comet Swift Tuttle every August, and we get to this really nice meteor shower. And this year, it was at what they call an outburst level because I believe Jupiter had an interaction in some way, and it pulled the thing around so that we were going to get a tremendous shower up to 200 meteors per hour. Now, Space Junkie Tony, not that I'm any good at this. If you remember, the first couple weeks of August in Morehead were miserably hot up in the upper 70s, close to 80s, way into the night. Well, it also rained a lot, so I was behind on my mowing. So I thought, here's what I'll do. I'm going to mow my pasture fields. I'll just make a big box where I can just drive straight, and I'll look up at the sky, and I'll drive at night and
now,
mow.
Why does this sounds like something Tony would do.
Right, and I get to watch
not
meteors.
Not Dr. Weaver. This
and
is
you
Tony.
Realize 200 meteors an hour. You know, ping, 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 just one after another. They're coming down, showering down. We need the Boston Pops playing Stars and Stripes Forever. It's going to be magnificent.
I want to know what the mowing looked like.
Well, it didn't matter because, you know, I would get some grass mowed and I would see this tremendous 200 per hour meteor shower.
You mowed your pasture looking up?
I saw, yeah, and I did, and I saw five meteors. I saw five shooting stars, most of which were very forgettable, and I was so disappointed. I'm always, I think, overly excited about things space. It didn't work out at all. Very disappointed.
Maybe you weren't looking in the right spot.
No, that's the great thing about the Perseids. You just look up. So all you had to do
clearly
was just
you
lean
did
back
something
on the
wrong.
Tractor. Yeah, yeah.
I mean, it had to be you.
It didn't work it out. At any rate.
I mean, these meteors have been coming through every August for
some of the pictures on the internet were just gorgeous, but not me.
You know what it was? You were more worried about staying in the lines.
Yeah.
I know you.
That darn gibbous moon. Yeah, mm-hmm. Had a gibbous moon. That was a problem. All right, first thing up, lung cancer.
First thing up with a minute to go. Good
lung
job.
Lung cancer and smoking cessation, a community symposium. This is sponsored by the Northeast AHEC. It will be at the Center for Health Education and Research on September 16th. This is an all-day thing. Registration, if you get up late. Registration at 10:30 to 11. At 11 o'clock, a general welcome. The Terminate Lung Cancer program is from 11 to 11:15. Health effects of smoking, tips to quit, lung cancer screening, and wrap up about 2 o'clock or so. So it's actually not all day at all, but it's a nice 4 hour or so thing to do in the middle of the day. There it is. Public is invited, as well as healthcare providers in the area. We will be focusing on preventing and detecting, screening for lung cancer in the symposium on September 16th at the Center for Health Education Research. Starts at 10:30 in the morning. Public invited and ends by 2:15. Register online. You have to register for this thing. You go to www.neahec. But we've got some more information in our second fractional portion. Please take a break.
And don't look up.
Yeah. Well, if you see a shooting star, take a photo and post it on our Facebook, because I sure didn't see any this go around with the Perseids. You're listening to Health Matters on Morehead State Public Radio.
Support for MSPR comes from the Northeast Kentucky Area Health Education Center, located at the St. Clair Regional Medical Center in Morehead. The Northeast AHEC connects students to careers, professionals to communities, and communities to better health. The Northeast AHEC strives to improve the supply and distribution of healthcare professionals through the community and academic educational partnerships. More information is available online at neahec.org.
Hello and welcome back. This is the second fractional portion of Health Matters. I'm Rick Phillips.
I'm Dr. Tony Weaver. We call this the NCE Larry Show. We have a former NASA chief engineer who is listening in on the show.
Who's now officially one of my favorites.
Yeah. We are big fans of the work that NASA did, so we are trying to really do this thing up.
Larry, I'm coming to Florida in a few weeks. I'm going to look you up. No, I'm just kidding.
Our sponsor for the second time, Grapefruit Juice, the healthy, all-natural way to completely screw up your medication. Again, reminding you
know that organization hates it when you say that. They just cringe when you say that.
That's why it's so much
fun. But you know what? You're not stating anything that the FDA won't back you up on.
I am reading from the
FDA. The FDA has your back, Tony. They got your back.
Makes you feel good, doesn't it?
Go ahead and tell all the truth you want.
Yeah, this is Los Angeles Times. This was last fall. The number of drugs that can cause serious reactions when mixed with grapefruit juice has increased dramatically. And again, this is an enzyme that breaks down a lot of more modern drugs. Between 2008 and 2012, we're up to 43 drugs. The FDA says there are more than 50 as of December 2015, more than 85 thought to interact with a with grapefruit, and again, 43 of them or 50 of them in a harmful way. The enzyme, it's something called CYP3A4, and it is a enzyme that breaks down medications and products in the environment. And the problem is quite simply the grapefruit juice ties up this enzyme. So when it should be breaking down your medication so you can take the next dose, in fact, it is busy with the grapefruit juice and the medicine just sits there. Eating a single grapefruit or drinking as little as 7 ounces of grapefruit juice can be enough to meaningfully alter the concentration of drugs. For some drugs, drinking 200 milliliters, again, is a fifth of a liter. That is a glass. If you drink that much daily, it's enough to deliver 3 to 6 times the normal dose of the drugs. People older than age 45 at the greatest risk. The FDA says, number one, ask your pharmacist if you can have fresh grapefruit when you pick up your medications. Two, read the medication guide or information sheet. Three, read a drug facts label on non-prescription medicines. Four, if you can't have grapefruit juice with your medicine, check your other fruit juices to see if they are, in fact, flavored or spiked with grapefruit juice. And then five, Seville oranges and Tangelos both affect the same enzyme and could conceivably cause the same problem. Our sponsor, Grapefruit Juice, the healthy, all-natural way to completely screw up your medications. First up.
I'm ready.
Okay. DEA rejects medical marijuana. August 11th.
Now,
yeah, well, the thing is, this is actually, in my mind, very reasonable. They said, look, we need sound, scientific, and rigorous research. Sure, President Obama has said they're going to look the other way. Sure, the states have decided that some of them have said, well, this is a recreational substance. It's probably not, we don't even have to worry about it. We'll bypass medical marijuana. I will tell you, there is not enough research on the health benefits of marijuana to allow the FDA to make a ruling, or I'm sorry, the DEA to make a ruling. Chuck Rosenberg, acting administrator, wrote in a letter. He said, using established scientific standards that are consistent with that same FDA drug approval process that's been in place for 50 years, as well as the legal standards, marijuana will remain a Schedule I controlled substance. Schedule I controlled substances are things like, again, marijuana and LSD, which have no known currently accepted medical use and a high potential for abuse. He said if scientific understanding changes, the decision could change. But we remain tethered to science as we must and as statutes demand. It would be odd to rely on science when it suits us and ignore it otherwise. So the FDA looked, and there is still no science. Now, it's a bit of a catch-22. If you leave it at Schedule 1, it's very hard to get marijuana to do research. And so scientists in Colorado are in an odd position. They can walk across the street and smoke marijuana.
They can't use it in their research.
They can't use it in their research because it's Schedule 1. And so the science will be extremely slow. This is going to be an unusual process and it's the consequence of a politician jumping the gun on the science. Now, that was a political decision. I'm not arguing the political decision, but science will not follow politics. Science has to follow science. And so in that sense, I believe the DEA was correct, although there are many I know who will disagree with me. And again, there are anecdotal reports that marijuana may help with certain types of seizure disorders, certainly with glaucoma, with other things. But when you look at the hard science, it's not enough to convince the FDA. And what I've seen, I tend to agree with them. It may be an absolutely miracle drug as far as treatment. It may be the answer to narcotic addiction. It may do wonderful things for our country, or it may do horrible things for our country. But the science is not there for the FDA to say, yeah, we will approve it for medical use. And they have made that announcement August 11th. Next up, I sort of like this. This was from the AMA Journal of Internal Medicine, August 10th, and it compared Medicaid expansion in Kentucky, which expanded a traditional Medicaid program, Arkansas, which put in an alternative Medicaid expansion plan, and Texas, which did nothing.
Two of the economies are fairly similar, and one of them's considerably different.
Yeah, but in terms of certainly all three states have significant people in poverty. Significant Medicaid population.
Sure, but I mean, you got to be able to separate those out in Texas because you got a whole lot more population centers in Texas.
True. They polled residents in all three states in 2013 before Medicaid expansion, and 2014 and also 2015. And they asked about their overall health care, how often they went to the emergency room, access to checkups, blood sugar and cholesterol testing, and so forth. Compared with Texas, Medicaid expansion in Arkansas and Kentucky was associated with a 23% reduction in our uninsured rate. So, yeah, you get people Medicaid. They're no longer uninsured. That's not science. That was completely expected. Medicaid beneficiaries in the expansion states were visiting physicians more frequently, had an easier time paying for their care. 16% increase in their likelihood of received a checkup, 14% decrease in difficulty paying bills, 12% increase in receiving regular care for a chronic condition, 11% decrease in skipping prescription drugs because of cost, 6% increase in screening for diabetes, 6% increase in likelihood of using the emergency room. And that is a problem. Medicaid expansion. We thought we might be able to get people into regular primary care visits. In fact, a lot of what's happened in the first couple of years has been an expansion in emergency room use. The increased access suggests that individuals living in expansion states may have better health outcomes. Now, it's a little bit early to track outcomes, but we in Kentucky are on our way possibly to better outcomes for our poorest citizens. Our problem is going to be the cost of sustaining this is going to be very difficult for our state to shoulder. And so the question is, can we continue Medicaid expansion long enough to see these benefits? What we do know is that people are taking their medications more, they're seeing the doctor more, they're getting more care for their chronic conditions. Will that lead to improvements in health? Hopefully, we can hold the course long enough to see. As a physician, I will tell you that Medicaid expansion was an absolute night and day difference in Eastern Kentucky. Never in my entire career have I seen anything like it in terms of improving people's access to care. I've worked at free clinics most of my life. I have seen people who just simply walk away when you tell them how much it's going to cost to treat their condition. And the idea that they can finally receive treatment, to me, is a great thing. Transcends my political views. I know this is darn near impossible to pay for, but when you see a person who you feel was going down a pathway toward chronic illness and disability, and they actually you're able to do something about that, it wakes you up. I'll just tell you that. This is for you, Rick.
Okay.
Health IT costs up 40% since 2009.
I wonder why.
Physician-owned multi-specialty practices spent more than $32,000 per full-time physician, IT equipment, staff maintenance, and related expenses in 2015.
So let me remind our listening audience, in case you're going, oh my gosh, that IT group, they're horrible. It wasn't their fault. Somebody, albeit the federal government, put a little bitty mandate in that said, oh yeah, if you're not electronic medical record, you need to be, or we're not going to pay you. So yeah, of course everybody spent a bunch more money. You just basically dropped the Y2K bug on them and said, hey, you've got a deadline, you've got a hit. And so digital is not easy.
Right.
And it's not cheap.
Now, and the interesting thing, Rick, and again, keep in mind, this is $32,000 now. The systems are implemented, but as you know, they're clunky. They do need a lot of maintenance. And
they were hurried.
Yes, and the implementation was rather rushed. What would Rick and I, you rarely chuckle where we are because, frankly, things are so bad that something that's just laughably bad is, I guess, gets you a mild laugh. But at any rate, when the Affordable Care Act was first proposed, IT, basically, they thought that computerizing medical records would save money, That was one of the areas of savings.
It'll save it in 50 years.
Yeah.
It's going to take 20 years to get data to be able to make the decisions that are going to drive the cost down.
Right.
But the initial build of the systems is going to be astronomical.
Physician-owned multi-specialty practices, says the Medical Group Management Association, have steadily risen year over year. The cost of IT staff risen by nearly 47% per full-time physician. Growing adoption and complexity of health IT, increased costs suggest larger investments in technology have yet to result in significant administrative efficiencies for practice. Their way of saying, basically, you're not going to see any of that money come back anytime soon. So this was a federal mandate. It was thought that once we got your electronic records online, that we would be able to see your lab tests from other places or your x-rays from other places. We would quit ordering redundant tests. We would be more efficient. And in fact, we would save money. And that savings was projected into the first 5 years of the Affordable Care Act. That was, I don't know if that was just wishful thinking. If somebody had to make the budget balance and just decided to put that in or not. But there was simply no way that was going to happen.
Well, I mean, Tony, there's a bigger, some of those things. Now, you can't just lump all that together and say, okay, that's all the same. Because each thing that was expected to save money is its own issue. And for instance, let's take the redundant testing, right? Let's take that and talk about that for just a second. Is it IT's fault that even though you may have access to those other records, and, oh, let me mention, by the way, I'm paid if I redo the test, right? So am I going to say I don't want to be paid and with my markup? You know, because obviously I'm not, when I do a test, there is some inherent markup on that that is a profit margin. Now, profit's a tough word in healthcare because that's not, you know, you're not always going to say in that this is a profitable endeavor, but you are adding something to it and you are bringing in additional revenue beyond what it costs to actually do the test in most cases. So why on earth is it IT's fault that people will continue to order a duplicate test because they make money on it? Is that, I mean, should we yell at the IT guys for that?
Well, sure.
No, we shouldn't.
Well, you asked the question. Well, if you're going to ask rhetorical questions, I'm going to answer no.
Well, you're not a rhetorical guy.
I know.
I'm more like NCE Larry.
Okay.
I guarantee you he would not have answered that way.
Okay. You hit me now with our role model, and I feel vastly inferior.
I'm saying is you know what I'm saying. Yeah. I think there are different ways that once the system gets acclimatized and everything is working, then yes, there is a, you know, less of a desire. Now, if somebody had to pay, if there was a proven test at another facility and you had to prove it was ineffective or unreliable or of not diagnostic quality, if there was something that you could do as a clinician to say, I'm going to say I have seen their other test, I don't buy it, I need to redo this on equipment that I know and trust. If you had to put your name on the line, that might change whether you redo it or not.
Well, I think we're eventually going to get to the point where I get paid to take care of patients rather than to do procedures. That's the fundamental mistake with our healthcare system right now.
Of course. It's all fee for service.
But even then, looking at this thing, I'll use the example. I'm a non-technical guy. I'll use the example of my car. When I climb into my car, when I turn the car on, a bunch of indicators come up. And those indicators are pretty important. They start with how fast the car is going. They start with how much gasoline I have left and so forth. And then lights may light up if something's going wrong with a car. And I can actually punch some buttons on my dashboard and investigate these things further. And then furthermore, if I can't figure it out, and most of the time I can't.
Are those buttons phone numbers? Because most of the time it just says call the service department.
Fair enough. But then I have that layer. So I've got the things that I immediately look at, the things that I might be able to manage. Like, again, if my oil pressure is low, I might check the oil and so forth. And then I have a third tier where I can get the mechanics to hook it up to a diagnostic computer. I'm looking for that sort of thing in healthcare. When I go in to see you, I should have in front of me some of the most immediate things that I need to take care of you. I should have indicators that there's a problem with other things, and then I should be able to drill down and find a more detail if I need it. And right now, these electronic health records sadly fall short. We are paying huge amounts of money and getting very little back for it right now. And Rick, in the defense of IT, eventually we will get to an incredible electronic medical record that will eclipse anything that I ever experienced in my training taking care of patients. But in all honesty, we are nowhere near that. And unfortunately, you know, the cost, the amount of money we are draining out of clinical practice is still just to maintain the IT systems we got. To me, this was a big major mistake to overload a system. And what they'll tell you, again, in the defense of IT, what they'll tell you is a lot of the cost is to comply with regulation after regulation after regulation. You set that on top of your IT, and the IT people are not trying to improve their system as much as trying to comply with new federal regulations.
Well, and then you throw in the security component of it where, you know, you got, you know, TV shows talking about how to order a hit on a person through their IV pump. I mean, so there's security issues now that have IT just, you know, trying to make sure that they got protective walls up and that things are being done in a way that is completely safe and you know, that in itself has a cost to it. And so I would love to sit and tell you that, you know, IT is going to be free someday. It's just not. It's no different than saying I'm going to get free X-ray tests. I'm never going to get free X-ray tests. Well, you're never going to get free IT. We're never going to get free physician services. It's a service that's part of a system. You know, at some point, the cost will go down.
Now, Rick and I, we can disagree on many things, but I think we will agree. This is going to get better. It simply has to.
Well, but what's going to happen is once we get past all the mandates, now they'll start making the efficiencies and the improvements because people's bottom line is going to be impacted.
Well, turning to something that's at least a little bit.
Are we done there?
Yeah.
You're done.
Yeah, I am.
So you're done bashing IT.
I think
40% increase.
I think we covered it well.
40% increase.
I think we covered it well.
You think?
Yes.
I don't know if we did or not.
Well, you'll like this because I want to get this in this segment. This is jobs with the highest suicide rate.
It's not IT.
No, it's actually not IT. You're absolutely right about that.
Guarantee you.
All right. In 2012, this was CDC. This was in their Morbidity and Mortality Weekly Report. These are some interesting numbers. In 2012, suicide, the 10th leading cause of death in the U.S., 40,000 deaths by suicide reporting. From 2000 to 2012, the rates of suicide jumped 21%. So the first question is, well, is there some occupation that leads to a high rate of suicide? So they looked at 12,000 suicide deaths. 77% were in men.
I believe
it. Does that surprise you?
Yep. No, it doesn't surprise me at all.
Well, I mean, it sort of does me because you think about it. We're right now, men are sort of in charge of things. We're the ones that are repressing everyone else. And yet we commit suicide. You would think if society was set up for us, we wouldn't commit suicide so much.
But I think we have more of a conscience than sometimes we're given credit for.
Wow.
Right?
No, not right.
No, I think we are. I think we do because okay. I think people, yeah, I think you can get just as depressed. You can feel like you're not supporting your family. You can feel like you're not doing your manly duties, which, let's be honest, have, you know, those manly duties have been instilled in people since, you know, sun ever shone.
All right.
It doesn't surprise me.
Well, I will say, going along with Rick's theory, suicide most prevalent among adults age 45 to 54 years. So no matter what your mopey teenager is doing,
right,
that's the most common time to have suicide, which is a bit of a surprise, but it does go along with what Rick says. Suicide rate highest among farming, fishing, and forestry, the three Fs. Construction and extraction jobs, also insulation, maintenance, and repair jobs. The thing that that these jobs have in common is they're generally done alone.
Right.
They're done more in isolation, not as much support. A forestry worker, farmer, spends a lot of time by themselves. Among women, the highest suicide rates were those working in protective services occupations, law enforcement and firefighters and things like that, legal profession, and healthcare and technical professions. And the argument there is, you know, people who see bad stuff, people who feel responsible for bad stuff.
Right.
That's what would make a woman commit suicide. Lowest suicide rates, education, training, and library workers. Darn those librarians. The lowest suicide rates are a librarian. That just doesn't seem fair. They get to be librarians and low suicide rates. Maybe we can target our suicide prevention then to those high-risk jobs. Maybe we can take a break. We're going to take a break and come back with our third and final fractional portion. You're listening to Health Matters on Morehead State Public Radio.
Support for MSPR comes from the Northeast Kentucky Area Health Education Center, located at the St. Clair Regional Medical Center in Morehead. The Northeast AHEC connects students to careers, professionals to communities, and communities to better health. The Northeast AHEC strives to improve the supply and distribution of healthcare professionals through the community and academic educational partnerships. More information is available online at neahec.org.
Hello and welcome back. This is the third and final fractional portion of Health Matters. I'm Rick Phillips.
I'm Dr. Tony Weaver. This is the NASA Chief Engineer Larry Show. Our salute to NCE Larry, who is listening to us via the internet.
We hope still. We may have run him off.
Retired Chief Engineer from NASA, and again, as our high-level respect, we are great fans and very pleased that a person of his intelligence and his experience would even consider listening to our show. What a great thing that is. Our sponsor for the final time, Grapefruit Juice, the healthy, all-natural way to completely screw up your medicines.
You think we could get Larry hit some of his contacts up so that we could get Health Matters played in space? Think we could do that? Wouldn't that be cool?
Why?
Bunch of useless Health Matters going in a bunch of vacuum space? I mean, it seems like a perfect match.
No, it does not seem. Now, think about this for a moment. One of the things about things that go out into space is an alien civilization might stumble upon them. Do you really
want...
We
would keep the aliens away. Let's be honest. They would not show up if they got that show.
We'll search for alien life, and we will repel them. Change the history of the world. Our sponsor is still Grapefruit Juice, the healthy, all-natural way to completely screw up your medications. Reminding the FDA, December 2015, it is a part of a balanced and nutritious diet, but it can have serious consequences when taken with medications. There are more than 50 prescription and over-the-counter drugs known to the FDA that can have negative interactions with grapefruit.
So, Tony, what I'm hearing you say is, well, let me first off say, I always say I don't like grapefruit.
Right.
But what I'm hearing you say is you can like grapefruit and you can be on medications, but please don't do them together.
Right.
They're, be very careful when you love grapefruit and you need to be on medication, because that is a, there is a good chance with 50 medications listed from the FDA, there's a good chance that you could have an interaction that you may not be aware of. So do your grapefruit juice different than your medication.
Right. And this is antibiotics like clarithromycin. Xanax will have an interaction. Heart drugs like amiodarone. The blood thinner warfarin, that's the old stuff, not the newer ones. Some cancer treatment drugs, prostate drugs, blood pressure medicines. Viagra interacts with grapefruit juice, as does testosterone. Cholesterol medicines, Lipitor and Zocor interact. Antidepressant medicine, Zoloft, and several painkiller medicines do. Read the labels. This is what the FDA says. First, ask your pharmacist about a new prescription. See if it interacts with grapefruit juice. Read the medication guide or the patient information sheet that comes with your prescription medicines.
Tony, will this show up as a label? At some point, will they require a label to be put on the medication that this has a grapefruit juice?
Well, it has.
Because it's a pretty common thing.
Right, and it is. For over-the-counter, it is a drug facts label, so this should be displayed prominently. There is a lot of those things are very small print, but most of the time the grapefruit interaction. And if you have any questions, if you can't find it, first of all, if it's not there, then that's a sign this drug is okay to take with grapefruit juice. But if you have any questions and you're not sure that you were able to search the literature on it, perhaps the package insert was just too small print, too many words, then ask the pharmacist. But don't take it for granted that grapefruit won't interact with your medications. And also, then number 4 and 5, if you can't have grapefruit juice with your medicine, check the labels of the bottles of fruit juice or fruit drinks, because some of them have grapefruit juice in them, and that's enough to make a difference as well. And then finally, Seville oranges, which we use for orange marmalade. I don't, but some do. And Tangelos, a cross between tangerines and grapefruit, have the same enzyme. They affect the same enzyme, as grapefruit juice and can have similar effects on your medications. That is our sponsor for the final time, Grapefruit Juice, the healthy, all-natural way to completely screw up your medications. Now, I am on suicide. I am.
You're on the topic of suicide.
I am on the topic of suicide. I realized I didn't phrase that very well, and I apologize for that. We talked last time about jobs, and just a reminder, we know for a fact that it is important that we have a social network. Even though I personally do not like other people are very useful.
They can be.
Yeah,
let's
society,
be honest.
The company of other people, very useful thing, and we should design our life, particularly as we get older, to interact with other people rather than to work in and live in isolation. And again, those who have the highest rates of suicides, farming, fishing, and forestry workers, working construction, maintenance and repair jobs, things where you might be working alone. Now, it may be that people are drawn to those jobs and have a higher rate of suicidal behavior in the first place. It's not saying that if your son or daughter wants to work on a farm that they are suicidal because they're doing that, but these are the highest rates and for whatever causes that. Among women, law enforcement, firefighting, legal profession, healthcare, all carry a higher rate of suicide.
Do you think that those jobs, I mean, the work done in those jobs can be very emotional, right?
Yes.
You're seeing people at their best and their worst, right? And it just drives your emotion. And do you think that's why maybe in the case of the women? I mean, I know that, you know, and I can't speak to all women. I'm not going to try to make a generalization. But I know the women in my life are far more emotional than I am. And I think that's one of those, you know, the guys just kind of get labeled as not having emotion. But, I mean, there is some truth in it. I mean, I don't know if it's, you know, I don't know what exactly it is. But do you think that you couple with the emotional state with the emotional job and it has some bearing there?
Well, they mentioned, again, if you look at it, for the men, it's a lot of alone stuff. For the women, it's a lot of, as you mentioned, see the bad side of society stuff. They mentioned, this is the CDC this was July 1st, the Morbidity and Mortality Weekly Report. They mentioned, the farmers, of course, get exposed to pesticides. Workers in installation maintenance may have neurotoxic solvents and things like that. So there might be some chemical issue right there. But you're right. I mean, if you just look at it from the emotional standpoint, law enforcement, firefighting, legal profession, and healthcare, those are some areas where you will see basically humanity in the raw.
Right.
Some of the roughest moments.
You can see the worst, but you can see the best. Unfortunately, you see more of the worst than the best.
Lowest suicide rate, and that is, again, if you look at farming, fishing, and forestry, 84 suicides per 100,000 people. You look at education, training, and library workers, 7.5.
Tony, you know what somebody needs to do? Somebody needs to do research. Give me just a second to go with this. Somebody needs to do research on those same categories of high-risk suicide or the larger percentage of suicide with the same exact profession in a different country, like a Germany or an Italy or somebody who kind of mandates a less stressful workplace. Because I'm sitting here looking, and one thing that struck me was when you said educators, right? The majority of our K-12 educators and a lot of our post-secondary education educators have nine-month schedules, right? So they have lots of time, right? I mean, I'm just curious. That to me, that lines up more with what we see in a Germany or in Italy.
Rick Phillips theory that European librarians.
No, not the European librarians.
But let's talk for a moment about European librarians.
A European dispatcher or police officer or firefighter. How do they compare to a U.S. one? That's what I'm saying, because I think they probably have – there's different shift work, right? They don't work 40 hours or they don't work 60 hours or they – you know, they take – I know Germany takes middle of the day. You know, well, you can speak to that. You have a daughter who lived there.
Yeah, they. I will say, you know, vacation's more common in Europe and mandated and taken.
I mean, I'm not trying to pick on the other group. I'm just saying I do know that there is a – I'm just saying there is a less – number of hours worked here, and maybe there's some correlation to that. Maybe we're working ourselves, because I mean, let's be honest, farmers are some hard working people.
I would agree with that.
And maybe we're working ourselves into this mental state.
Well, let me give you another theory on suicide, and I'm sorry that I
can't go along with what I'm saying, can you?
Well, no, I will accept that your point that we are certainly high-stress jobs. The problem is defining a high-stress job. I think educating young people especially with budget cuts, without is a very high-stress job. Now, admittedly, you do get some time off that job, But
I'm not suggesting that it's not high stress. I'm saying you don't put in the same consistent, repetitive hours, right?
Yeah.
So you do have times. There is things to look forward to. Well, and let's be honest, some educators, some schools, Arizona only gets 1 month off.
Right.
Right? So that wouldn't necessarily correlate.
And also, whatever you, for whatever reason, we're searching for that reason, educators do have lower rates of suicide than farmers and forestry workers. And so it might be the education itself. It might be a different lifestyle.
Sure. And all I'm suggesting is it'd be neat to correlate the same group of lawyer, you know, law, you know, police officers, firemen from other countries that have different work environments.
Fair enough. Continuing on with this, and an entirely different look at suicide, and I found this fascinating. August 10th, the AMA Journal of Psychiatry, they looked. This was the Danish nationwide registry, 7 million Danish citizens, 15 years of age or older, and they followed them from 1980 all the way through 2011, 31 years of follow-up, and they looked at their rate of hospitalization for infection. These would be things like pneumonias, abdominal infections, serious infections requiring hospitalization. If you looked at those who had a serious infection, they had, wait for this, Rick, a 42% higher rate of suicide as a group than those who were not hospitalized with serious infections.
So what you're saying is little white blood cells make you think different.
Well, you know, we've talked a lot about your immune system and infections and mental health.
Mm-hmm.
That it may be that both your personality and your mental health is affected by your immune system, your inflammatory system, or by infections. So they you think, well, okay, but people who are chronically ill, lower income, they're going to have more infections, and so that makes the work invalid. They actually tried to adjust for that. It was still 43% higher. Highest rate of suicide among those who were hospitalized more than 7 times with infections, had recurrent infections. If you have just one infection, you were 34% more likely to commit suicide. Duration of hospitalization, if you were kept in the hospital longer, a more serious infection, more likely. And most of the increase in likelihood was within 1 to 2 years after you were hospitalized. There were a couple infections that didn't matter. Earaches, again, who would be hospitalized with an ear infection? I don't know. Pregnancy-related infections. You could be hospitalized with that, and it may not be a major infection.
I mean, how many people walk around with gingivitis, which is basically an infection, right?
Well, that's what they were talking about. We've known before, and we talked about it, this toxoplasmosis. We know that it is linked to higher levels of aggression. This is the stuff that's in basically in cat poop.
Right.
If you change an indoor cat box, you may be exposed to toxoplasmosis, and that's why pregnant women are not supposed to have anything to do with cats and their waste products or young children, because they can get toxoplasmosis. Toxoplasmosis.
No, they're not supposed to have any action with young children.
Infants are not supposed to be messing around with cat poop. Just as a rule.
That's not a sandbox they can play in.
That is correct. Yeah. So. But influenza B virus and toxoplasmosis have been linked to suicidal behavior. And again, toxoplasmosis, we're now understanding, causes some major behavioral changes. This is a parasite that it does get to your brain, although it doesn't. We didn't think it damaged the brain. It appears to alter your personality. We know that people who have had recent suicide attempts have higher levels of inflammatory proteins in their bloodstream. These are the proteins that fight infections. They've actually done brain samples of people who died from suicide, and they saw higher levels of inflammatory proteins as well. If we look, even after adjusting for the effect of long-term diseases, long-term poor physical health, long-term poor economic health, the association between infection and suicide is still significant. So it may be, first of all, we may need to use anti-inflammatory medicines in treating people who are suicidal. Or secondly, as you mentioned, Rick, we need to take infections more seriously. They may change the nature of our personalities, who we are.
Right.
And I think, you know, personality and mental illness is always something that we've just sort of thought it arises. That when you talk about a person who committed suicide, you think of, well, what stress were they under? Did they appear to be sad?
Right.
What events occurred in their life? You would not think in terms of infection. And from the last time, we would not think in terms of a job necessarily, an occupation.
But you know, Tony, I do think that like everything we talk about on this show, we have no answers and we have theories and it's very complex things that we're talking about. I mean, the fact is this is probably going to come down in 150 years as some combination of all of that, right? So it's the combination of the stress. It's the combination of keep carrying around an infection for too long or too severe. I think, interesting, we went down this infection road with the whole gingivitis and the whole tooth. What is your oral health like, and how does that change who we are and how healthy we are? And there's study after study after study that would just suggest that your oral health was a huge indicator on, you know, how healthy you were going to be. I don't know. It's just fascinating. It turns out that a long time ago, we talked about certain things. The last few years, it's been bacteria and infection.
Yeah, and that, you're right. That is interesting that we're back to that again. And when you're talking about those study after study on your oral health, on your gingivitis and so forth, we link that to risk of stroke, poor outcomes in pregnancy, to heart disease, but never to mental illness or to suicidality or anything like that. So now we're starting to think about what causes personalities to become personalities, which, again, for me is absolutely fascinating. We've talked a lot about the germs that grow in your gut. One of the things they looked at is they looked at whether bacterial infections were worse than viral infections, and they did not see that. So they argue it's not necessarily the infectious agent. It's not necessarily whether you got antibiotic. I'm a little skeptical of that, because most of the people we hospitalize with viral illnesses, we cover with antibiotics just to be sure anyway. So I'm not sure if this might be altering the germs that are present on your body, or if it is inflammatory markers, or if it is a byproduct of certain types of infections. But I think we have to think about infections and the germs that surround us differently. Our response to infections may change our personality, may even make us suicidal. The germs that are in our gut have a lot to do with not only whether or not we get diarrhea, but also whether we get cancer or other conditions.
But Tony, don't you think that if we figure out through research and science what is an indicator, or what causes or predetermines or provides the catalyst for suicidal thoughts, doesn't that mean that's something that we can likewise create something to go in and take a drug to basically reverse?
Well, it gives us hope. Let's face it, our antidepressant medicines, particularly in the case of suicidality, have not been very effective.
Right.
And they may have, in the case of teenagers, may have actually made it worse.
It's unlike us talking about hope.
We need to get off the air before we do something crazy.
Special thanks to our Morehead State Public Radio producer, Tanner Boyd, and to Eric Bilbrey, who wrote our Health Matters theme song. And to you, our loyal radio fans, remember to show your support for Health Matters by visiting our digital empire. To listen to our show, go to WMKY.org or visit us on Facebook, like Larry did, at facebook.com/HMRadioshow.
Our radio crew and the supportive folks at the Northeast AHEC remind you and thank you for listening to our show. But remember,
recent research has highlighted one of the major obstacles to manned Mars missions, Health Matters Radio Show. According to reports, astronauts on the International Space Station receive doses of Health Matters that exceed their lifetime limits after 2 years in space. A Mars mission crew would spend at least this long in deep space.
Health Matters is a unique type of radio show that is difficult to shield against. New research points out that the cancer an astronaut would develop after too much Health Matters is bound to be very dangerous.
During certain periods in the solar cycle, Health Matters is reduced. But we need more information about the safety of space travel. NASA's guidelines prohibit its astronauts from increasing their probability of dying from cancer by more than 3%. One trip to Mars could exceed that total.
And that's actually true. An astronaut on a round-trip, 2.5-year Mars mission can expect to receive 300 times more radiation than if they stayed on Earth. This could raise cancer rates by a third, and half those new cancers would result in death.
Experts estimate that an astronaut's lifespan after exposure to Health Matters on a Mars trip would be shortened between 15 and 24 years from the average.
Whatever you do not take Health Matters lying down. Get out this week, make a healthy change in your life, and tune in next week for our return from space to Earth is Human on Morehead State Public Radio.
Okay, engine stop. Houston, Tranquility Base here. The Eagle has landed.
Support for Health Matters on MSPR comes from the Northeast Kentucky Area Health Education Center, located at the St. Clair Regional Medical Center in Moorhead. Additional information on the Northeast AHEC is available online at neahec.org.